The Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. It takes a certain kind of brave to run a business. We see it, we back it.
Well, it looks like many of us are going to be staying at home again for a while. During the lockdown, there was a huge increase in online spending, particularly on clothes, gaming and home improvements, as people were cooped up at home. They were the perfect conditions for our next guest company. JJ McGettrick has created the Booking.com equivalent for home furnishings, with 120 retailers under the one roof, including the likes of John Lewis and Made.com. And they've been doing very well during lockdown. Deirdre, let's go back to the start. I know before you founded YouFurnish.com, you were an investment banker. Did you always plan to set up your own business?
I don't think I overly had a plan in terms of how it would end up. But I think if I go back before investment banking, I grew up in Ballymote in County Sligo. My dad had a drapery shop. I loved working with him out in the shop. I loved everything about business. He used to fit blinds and curtains, and that was particularly of interest because I loved all the materials. And also I used to go out with him after work and fit blinds all around the parish, because I got a chance to have a gawk at people's houses. What was the design, new houses that were being built. I've always loved interior design. In fact, I used to cut out the Argus catalogue and cut out all of the pictures of furniture to design my own house. So I ended up in investment banking, and you know, that was brilliant from a business perspective because I was working with companies such as Ocado or House of Fraser and Premier Foods, and you spend quite a long time, if you're doing bonds for companies, understanding how they operate. So I got a great grounding in business. And then I bought an apartment, and you know, that's just a general life stage that people go through. And from that, really, the idea came out because I struggled to find the furniture I was looking for. So I suppose I always had ambitions of starting my own business, or maybe more going into a management role in a business. So maybe I would have moved across into one of the companies that I was working for in banking and moved up into their management ranks. But when I had this idea, it was sort of a no-brainer, because it was like, wow, I can really combine my passion for interiors with my business knowledge to achieve, you know, building a business, running a business, growing a business, but in the area I'm most passionate about. So I had to do it. I would always regret it. I knew I'd always regret it if I didn't do it. So I had to go for it.
You told an interesting anecdote there of the Argus catalogues, clearly shaped part of your business brain. Maybe remote country living, possibly quite boring for you. You grew up then in a house with two brothers. I'm curious, did they impact, you know, that transition into a very male-dominated world of investment banking? So how did all of those experiences ultimately shape your business brain?
Yeah, it's interesting, because when you're a kid, you're just, you don't really notice your surroundings or any of that. But I definitely think that, you know, my intuition and my business, it's osmosis. So by spending so much time in my dad's business and in the shop, you were definitely absorbing all of the conversations without even realizing it. And I think having two older brothers as well, so there was always that competitiveness. And, you know, I grew up in the early 1990s, I suppose, if you're looking at it, being a kid going to school. And it was still in parts, you know, a little bit sexist. I remember a lady walked into the shop, one of the neighbours, and I was serving her, and she asked me, "Are you as smart as the boys?" And I said, "I am." And she was quite taken aback, because I suppose it's not what you were meant to say. But as far as I was concerned, I was. And I was always sort of brought up to be equal to whoever it is. So I never noticed a difference. But I definitely think it had an impact. And when I look sort of through my career in investment banking, you know, I never questioned my right to be there. It was always just, of course I was there. I had got the grades. I'd got through the interview. I was doing the work. Why wouldn't I be? So I was never apologetic. I was always very confident in my role and in my right to be there. And I think that did come from sort of growing up in the boisterous sort of boys and just trying to compete and get along with them.
You started the business with your husband. He is your co-founder. You had a name change. You have successfully fundraised 1.8 million. What have been the learnings out of name changes, fundraising, but also working with your business and life partner?
Yes, yes. So we've been on quite the journey. So we were boyfriend and girlfriend when we had the idea and we started pushing it back and forth, wondering, would this be something we'd set up? The reason that we went into business together was simply given his skill set and my skill set. So there were certain things that I didn't know how to do. He had come from a startup. It had grown from, he was the fifth employee to 500. He had built up a division, which was turning over 10 million per year. So it was a third of that business's revenue. So he knew how to start a startup. I knew about interiors and furniture and about raising money. So we sort of had a very complementary skill set. And it was after that that we actually ended up getting engaged and we got married over lockdown. And, you know, it's sort of been that journey along. And I think what's nice about working with your other half is that we're both so driven and so aligned with it. I'm not sure I could be a startup widow, I think is the term that they use. If it was just him working all the time, I'd get really annoyed because I'd want to go out and have fun or go for dinner or go away for a weekend. Is where now we sort of, we'll have something booked and we'll be like, I think we should cancel that weekend. And he was like, I was thinking it too. I didn't know how to say it to you. So I think we're quite aligned in terms of what we want for the business. So it actually makes it easier. And of course, you can share all the stresses and the worries.
And I was just going to ask you, what was it like getting married at the height of lockdown here in Ireland?
Yes, it was interesting. We flew back from Gatwick and I remember the airport was deserted. It was like a ghost town, one of those movies, 28 days later. And we self-isolated in my brother's apartment for 2 weeks in Dublin. And then we drove down to Sligo and we got married with 14 guests on Monday, the 29th of June. That was the date that phase three came into play. So the week that we were in lockdown before the wedding, the government came out and announced you could have guests at a wedding. So we had assumed it would just be the two of us and two witnesses. But all of a sudden we were able to have my sort of wider family attend. And then we had a Facebook link. The parish had a Facebook page and they broadcast the wedding live. So we had people join in from Australia. Rhea's from Australia, Sweden, Hong Kong, New York, London and around Ireland. So it was quite weird. We had, you know, the laptop on the side of the altar and you could see it out of the corner of your eye. I didn't pass too much heed, but we've had feedback from everybody that that's the best wedding I've ever been at. I've never seen so much. I'm usually down the back and I can't see. So it was different, you know, not as we'd originally planned, but you've got to adapt. And that's one thing about being an entrepreneur. Things don't go to plan and it's about your ability to adapt and get on with it.
Some might say 2 weeks with your business and life partner in quarantine building up to a wedding would be very romantic. Is that how it played out?
I don't know about romantic. You work a lot. Work does take over, unfortunately or fortunately, I don't know. Well, we both love it so much. You just literally want to work all the time because every time that you do something, you can see the impact and you can see the growth and it's your baby. And you know, we both want it to work so badly that, you know, you're just always trying to do everything to make it as successful as possible.
And you have now people you can delegate to. You're now a team of 13 people, some of whom you've never actually met because you've hired them through Zoom video conference calls. What has it been like managing a team of people remotely?
So it's had its challenges. I think we signed an office 2 weeks before lockdown. It was at London Bridge across from Borough Market and we've since let it go. And we've completely changed our attitude to how we want to work as a company. So we will now be running a distributed model where everybody will be working remotely from home. And instead, what we will do is we will have bi-monthly get-togethers where we bring everybody together, have brainstorming, whiteboard sessions, networking, so that everybody has, you know, that sense of being within an organization. But actually, most of the time you're working from home. And we implemented that actually as a result of actually all of our team saying we don't want to come into an office. And we're like, okay, that's fine. You know, everybody's working from home, we're getting the work done, we're progressing at, you know, a rate of knots in the company. So if that works best for people, we're happy to accommodate that. And of course, it gives opportunities to hire different talent that maybe we wouldn't have got otherwise. You know, we've attracted, our latest hire is Tony Wood. She's our chief marketing officer, and Tony was previously the chief marketing and commercial officer at DFS, as well as being on their board. DFS obviously being one of the biggest listed furniture retailers in the UK. So it's been quite amazing, actually, the amount of talent that you can attract into the business by having a bit more flexibility, which I think is a testament to, you know, what the future could hold.
Small team, funders, investors behind you, you're going from that start to growth phase now. Is there any part of you could ever imagine retiring to Ballymoath in Sligo, taking on a drapery business like your father's? Or do you ultimately see this is a new era and that era is now moving online?
I think, unfortunately, the era is moving online. You know, it's a little bit sad. You know, McGettrick Shop has been through three generations of McGettricks. If I were to take it on, I'd be the fourth. It's been in operation for over a century. When I speak to people, even in London, and they're from Sligo, if I say McGettricks, they automatically know who you are, which is quite nice. And unfortunately, I think my dad will close the business this year. And that's a reflection of changing times. You know, people are not shopping necessarily in smaller towns for your clothes. You'll do your grocery shopping, but the other services are moving to bigger towns and moving online. So, you know, it's with a tinge of sadness that you see that, definitely. But having said that, my business wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for change. So it's just the way of the world. It's life, isn't it? It's always going to be progressing and advancing and changing, and we've got to keep up.
Can you end by maybe giving us a piece of advice to people looking at that moment of reset to leave a comfortable, maybe secure job, or maybe find themselves having to retrain, rethink, and the process of taking that leap? What would you say to them in terms of what drove you to that point?
I would say research. Do as much research as you can in relation to the background, the business model, the consumers. Is there a need for it? Talk to a host of different people. Don't get the same opinions. Talk to people who disagree with you, because a lot of people will tell you, yes, everything is a great idea. But find out the people who don't think it's a good idea and listen to what they're saying.
Very good. CEO of YouFurnish.com, Deirdre McGettrick, thank you.